Today is Friday, April 2nd, 2010. I'm Revya Seda. This is News 101.
Right here on News 101.
Right here on News 101.
Right here on News 101.
What motivated you to become a candidate in the provincial election?
The media portrayal of last week's protest that resulted in polarizing images of black-clad activists taken to the streets.
He was just explaining to us the reason why they wanted to show this film on campus.
The official stance is that we are for the Olympics.
News 101 reporter Brad Pepping was there.
By discriminating against homeless people in Vancouver, there's a disproportionate impact on Aboriginal people as well as people with disabilities.
I was pretty outraged. I mean, it is outrageous.
In-depth coverage from an alternative perspective.
You're listening to News 101, Vancouver's only live, volunteer-produced, student and community newscast, offering you local, national, and international news from an alternative perspective.
Good evening, and thanks for being with us. On today's show, we bring you a special edition of News 101, focused on education and the recent funding cuts affecting BC schools. We will be bringing you an interview with Jane Bowie, a trustee from the Vancouver School Board, as well as an interview with Anne Guthrie Warman, president of the Vancouver Secondary Teachers Association. To follow up this coverage, we will also be bringing you an interview with Denise Moffitt, the president of the Surrey Teachers Association. We'll have all this, plus your free speech radio news headlines and your weekend weather forecast, coming up this hour right here on News 101. And first, here are your Friday headlines from Free Speech Radio News.
I'm Jess Burns with headlines for Free Speech Radio News. Israeli air raids on Gaza overnight left three wounded and a number of buildings devastated. Israeli officials say the attacks were in response to homemade rocket fire from Gaza. FSRN's Rami Omagari reports.
Israeli warplanes carried out several air raids on the Gaza Strip Thursday night. This follows armed clashes last week, which left two Israeli soldiers and two Palestinian resistance fighters killed. Medical sources say that at least three children were wounded when the Israeli raids hit a dairy in southern Gaza City. Mu'tasim Dalul is owner of the dairy. This is the second time that Mu'tasim's dairy has been targeted in the past year.
All things inside the factory have been completely destroyed. I believe Israel considers this factory part of Gaza's economic infrastructure and sees it as a symbol of the steadfastness of the people here.
Israeli raids also hit areas adjacent to the Hamas-sponsored Asda media production studio in southern Gaza Strip, as well as a metal workshop in the middle of the region. The Hamas-led government wants help from the international community to curb the Israeli raids. Israeli media reports that senior Israeli officials are indicating more attacks on Gaza are likely soon unless Hamas stops homemade rocket fire from within the territory. Rami Almighari, Free Speech Radio News, Gaza.
The Prime Minister of Guinea-Bissau was released from house arrest after being taken into custody by the military yesterday in what many are calling a coup attempt. The military action was met with protests by hundreds calling for the restoration and assurance of democracy in the West African country. Several major candidates opposing incumbent Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir have dropped out of the upcoming national election. The move to boycott was led Wednesday by the Sudan People's Liberation Movement's presidential candidate, Yasir Arman. After meeting with U.S. envoy Scott Grayton yesterday, several other opposition groups decided to boycott as well. They believe the elections will be fixed. But Abdul Mahmoud Mohammed, Sudan's ambassador to the UN, told Press TV that al-Bashir's ruling government is committed to democratic transformation.
So that we are governed through a ballot box rather than a bullet. On this we are happy also because the process is going on and elections are going to be held with whoever is attending.
The April 11th election preparations have also been met with criticism by international organizations who say the country is not adequately prepared to hold a fair election. The pullout of so many candidates threatens to undermine the legitimacy of Bashir's now imminent victory and to unravel tentative peace deals between militant groups in Sudan. The U.S. envoy is meeting again today with opposition party leaders, encouraging them to participate in next week's polls. The U.S. continues to add jobs, according to new figures released by the Labor Department today, but the country's unemployment rate remains at 9.7%. Labor Secretary Hilda Solis called the addition of 162,000 jobs encouraging, but said it's important that the Obama administration's job creation measures reach the people who need it most. The so-called real unemployment rate was 16.9% for the month of March. This includes workers who have stopped looking for work and those who are working part-time because they can't find full-time work. The 16.9% is slightly higher than February and more than a percentage point higher than March of last year. A judge in Wichita, Kansas, sentenced Scott Roeder to life in prison for the murder of Dr. George Tiller, a late-term abortion provider who he shot last May. Sevilla Mann has the details.
The judge imposed the maximum sentence for the killing, for which Scott Roeder was found guilty in January. The defense was pushing for a life sentence with the possibility of parole in 25 years. But Judge Warren Wilbert ruled that because Roeder stalked Tiller before shooting him, there was an aggravating factor, which led to the longer sentence of 50 years without parole. Roeder took the stand Thursday, saying he shot Dr. Tiller to save the lives of unborn children. He expressed no remorse for the killing. Tiller family lawyer Lee Thompson told the judge this lack of remorse and the fact he bragged to others about the killing made Roeder's crime an act of domestic terrorism.
A heinous, atrocious, cruel murder plan plotted and devised for years and years and designed and executed solely for the purpose of killing someone with whom he disagreed.
The longer sentence means that Roeder, now 52, will probably spend the rest of his life in prison. He has 10 days to file an appeal. Sevilla Mann, FSRN.
And finally, a prominent land reform activist in Brazil has been shot and killed. Police say motorcycle gunmen shot Pedro Alcantara de Souza 5 times in the head. Authorities are connecting the murder with a string of violence against land reform activists who represent landless farmers in their fight against powerful ranchers. Hundreds of farmers' advocates have been murdered over the past decades, with the perpetrators rarely being brought to justice. Earlier this week, a Brazilian judge delayed the trial of a rancher who allegedly masterminded the murder of U.S. nun and Amazon activist Dorothy Stang. And that's headlines for Free Speech Radio News. From Eugene, Oregon, I'm Jess Burns.
Thank you to Free Speech Radio News for those headlines. Next up, we bring you an interview with Vancouver School Board Trustee Jane Bowie from an early February edition of News 101, following the initial announcement that up to 800 teachers in the Vancouver School District could be laid off. Over the last week, we have learned more about the extent of the funding cuts. In a letter sent to parents, the VSB has announced a budget shortfall of $18.12 million. Based on preliminary grants announced March 15th, the VSB will receive $447.8 million for the 2010-2011 school year. Although the VSB has made $51 million in accumulated spending reductions over the course of the last 8 years, they stress that further reductions will make it immediately difficult to meet student needs.
So I'd like to just start by talking about the notices that teachers in the Vancouver School District received this past January.
Mm-hmm.
So 800 teachers have been notified that there could be possible layoffs. How do you feel about this?
It's extraordinarily upsetting. Looking at these sorts of numbers, it's unprecedented in the district.
Have there been
notices? Makes me angry.
Yeah. Have there been notices like this that have been sent out in previous years notifying teachers that there could potentially be a layoff, but not giving them certainty about it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, what it is it's the process is part of the collective agreement we have with teachers. So there's a result of some arbitration decisions that happened, you know, years ago. So there's a whole process that's set up so that to ensure that layoffs are done in a way that's fair and gives proper notice and follows every aspect of the collective agreement.
Okay.
So that's been in place for quite a while. In recent years, the district hasn't had layoffs. The last time that there were layoffs, I believe, was 2004, and that was a year when the district had to cut $11 million out of the budget, and a similar process was followed. The number of letters that went out that time were around 400, and the actual layoffs ended up being about half that, if I remember correctly. Those are just sort of ballpark figures based on my memory rather than specific numbers.
Right.
So that the number, because it's the letters that go out, that went out, what they are determining what people's qualifications are.
Right.
So that when and if layoffs are done, that information is in place in order to determine.
The estimated shortfall is anywhere between, it's been estimated from $17 million to around $36 million, that's correct? That's the estimate?
That's correct, although sometimes, depending on what the most recent numbers are, sometimes it goes up around 38.
Okay.
But yeah, it's... And those sorts of numbers, as I said, are at the upper end are unprecedented, although in 2002, shortly after the Liberals came into power, the school district under the NPA board cut $26 million out of the budget, and that had a huge impact at the district.
Why have yet
recovered from.
Right. Why are we seeing such a significant shortfall this year in particular?
This year in particular, well, it's a number of things. But the primary cause of it is a whole number of unfunded costs that are generated at the provincial level. That includes things like salary benefits for teachers that are, you know, those are negotiated provincially. Things like the carbon tax that we're having to pay the carbon tax credits to cover that for that project. As well as there's the medical. The MSP premiums that school boards are responsible for a large segment of our employees. It's a whole long list of things. Plus, there was the elimination of the annual facilities grant that happened last year, and school districts had to make cuts in order to do that, which then meant that districts such as ours, we eliminated every single bit of surplus. That we might have had in the district that might have otherwise been able to carry forward to the coming year. Plus, there's that funding that districts would have had in the past that isn't there. So that, for our district, is $10.6 million and is about $110 million for the provincially. So that's one bunch of it. There's the implementation of all-day kindergarten that the province has implemented on the provincial basis and yet hasn't provided some funding, but not sufficient funding to cover all of the extra costs that districts have to look at. So the Provincial Secretary Treasurer's Association, it's called ASBO, the Association of School Business Officers, which are, you know, a very, you know, conservative in the small c sense of the word organization. They are extraordinarily alarmed and have issued a statement saying just to maintain what we have this year, the province would have to inject an extra $300 million provincially just in order to keep what we have now. And that's after years of underfunding.
And this is just for public education in the province?
Just for public education in the province. And all the province in their last projection of what they would, like, they usually give sort of 3 years of what they say they will be funding. They have said they would be adding an extra $37 million provincially to the education budget. So that's, you know, the difference is about $260 million difference between what the province is saying they would give as opposed to what the most knowledgeable people in terms of the finances of school boards are saying is necessary just to maintain what we have, let alone, you know, improve and enhance what we have.
The education minister, Margaret McDermid, says that the funding shortfall, the projected shortfall, is due to declining enrollment, and that's the main reason, because enrollment, the funding is tied to enrollment in the school districts. How do you feel about that comment from the education minister?
Yeah, it's just incorrect. I was just on the phone with a trustee from Caribou Chilcotin who have just voted to that they would maintain their present services even if it means breaking the law. Mm-hmm. He feels that that what they know is that yes, they have declining enrollment. They can make the cuts necessary to cover that shortfall from the declining enrollment. That's what they've been doing, and that's what they continue to do. The problem are these are this astronomical and ever growing level of unfunded costs. I mean, for instance, with the carbon tax, not only do we have to, it doesn't matter whether or not you're for or against the carbon tax, but there's all these other costs associated with it. School boards have had to hire extra staff in order to collect the numbers that the province says that they need. The province has said we have to bring in a software program called Smart Tool, which is another extra cost, in order to be able to get that information to the province and collect that information. It's practically a weekly basis we receive information of more costs from the province that aren't being funded, are dictated by them.
Practically in the same sentence, though, Ms. McDermid has said that the province has, the Liberal government has been increasing funding for public schools in the province. How do you respond to that?
Well, someone put it in one way that I think is pretty easy to understand, and that's that we get it's like getting an allowance from your parents and then them suddenly deciding to start charging your rent. That's more than far more than your allowance. And certainly their per capita funding, it remains pretty constant, but there's all these added costs on top of that aren't funded from that per student funding that they always refer to when they talk about school funding. Plus, if you include things like the eliminations of the annual facilities grants, they eliminated literacy grants that for our district alone was $250,000 that they just eliminated without any warning whatsoever. So if you look at that, there's no way that our funding comes anywhere close to meeting our costs.
Many of the
as if you look at it in terms of percentage of the GDP, BC ranks amongst the bottom of all provinces in the country in terms of funding of education as a percentage of our GDP.
Right. You did mention programs that have been called already. Among those, secondary school sports programs have seen cuts already. How do you feel at a time when we're spending the city and the province are spending billions of dollars on the Olympics, which are coming in under two weeks? How do you feel when programs like secondary sports are being cut while funding for the Olympics is completely it's on the rise, and it will continue to probably be on the rise, and we may see costs that have been unannounced and not made public?
Yeah, I guess for me personally, it makes me furious. I think that if the people of this province had fully understood what this meant in terms of priorities, of what was funded, if they had known how much the Olympics were really going to cost at the same time as the level of cuts that were being faced in areas like education and the arts, let alone city services. I don't know if there would have been the same level of support for the Olympics that there was at the time.
Do people see this connection, though, between cutting sports programs and yet we're spending money on a huge sports event? Is that not completely sort of ironic in a very sad way?
Yeah, it's extraordinarily ironic, and I think significant numbers of people do understand it and see it. It's one of those things that I keep pointing out. For instance, even just you look at the numbers that I gave you in terms of what the Secretary Treasurers have estimated for provincial needs just to keep our funding levels at the level that they are now, being $300 million, and you look at what the province has said that they will put in to put a new roof on BC Place, which is close to $500 million. It really makes you question where the priorities of the province are, and yet at the same time the province, you know, in their throne speech said that that in really difficult economic times, there's no better place to invest than in education, and it was important to do so to maintain and expand education services. That's what they said in their throne speech in February
last year. Your colleague, the chair of the Vancouver School Board, Patty Baucus, has expressed concern over the possibility of the province completely eliminating school boards in districts across the province. Do you see this as a possibility and a threat?
We know that it's something I shouldn't say it. We know. We understand that this is something that the Liberals have looked at since they first came into office, and when they implemented the health boards and on a regional basis like they have. Our understanding is that there was consideration of moving then towards having school boards on it. Appointed school boards using this exact same regional map. And for one reason or another, that hasn't happened. I think that it's interesting that the rumors that this is something that the Liberals are considering tends to arise when school boards become the most vocal. Because that was the case in 2002 when there were the massive cuts provincially. There was a lot of school boards that spoke out, and that was when they were, you know, looking at it at that time. And school boards are speaking out again now, and all of a sudden we're starting to hear that. I think it's also, though, politically useful for the province to have school boards operate as sort of a buffer, so that people can be angry at their school board for what they do, rather than understanding that it's the province that is, bears the bulk of the responsibility.
Right. I want to talk about what these cuts could... Actually, first I want to ask you, would the Vancouver School Board, and would you be considering running a deficit? At this point in time, school boards across the province can't run deficits, unlike the provincial government. Is this something that you would be in support of doing?
At this point, unless the government provides the funding necessary for us to maintain our current level of services, because I don't think they're adequate. I would seriously look at. I guess my answer is yes. I would vote at this point in time. I would vote with the information I have now. I would vote against making cuts or in favor of running a deficit, whichever.
And are your colleagues on the school board, are other trustees in support of similar ideas?
I would say it's something that is we haven't had any collective discussion of, but we haven't also taken it off the table as a possibility.
I want to ask you about what this, if there are significant cuts made, what this looks like for individual schools. What are classroom sizes going to look like, and what are special programs, music programs, sports programs going to look like?
Yeah, it's our staff haven't done a lot of the specifics yet, so this is just sort of guesswork and projection at the present time. But every school, I can't see how every school won't be affected in one way or another. At the elementary level, class sizes are protected by the Bill 33 legislation, and they're pretty much already close to their maximum. So I don't think there would be a difference in class size at the elementary level. Could be at the secondary level. What would most likely happen would be reductions in electives and music programs and arts programs, and closing of school libraries, since we'd probably have to lay off teacher librarians. We'd have to be looking at closing schools, if not this year, in the future, in the near future, to try and recover costs. The board would also have to be looking at elimination of certain programs if depending on what the expenses required to run those programs are.
Okay. Well,
so it would be devastating, which is why I couldn't in good conscience vote to do any of those things at this point.
Right.
But I still am optimistic that if the province truly hears from boards right across the province and understands that we're not just doing some sort of political posturing, but in actual fact, public education itself is at stake, and it, the population understands that, the people understand that, and make sure that they let the government know that that we want to protect public education and put the funds necessary to protect it, I am optimistic that the province will inject the monies necessary for us to not have to take those measures.
Right. Other advocacy groups in Vancouver are using the Olympics as a way to draw attention to a lot of different social problems, not only in Vancouver but in the province. Is this an opportunity to talk to international media and say, yes, we're hosting the Olympics, but we can't even fund secondary school sports programs?
Yeah, I think that it's that education advocates, probably should take advantage of the opportunity to do so. It's just a question of getting those voices out there to do so.
Okay. Well, thank you. I think we'll leave it at that. Thanks for talking to CITR.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Bye-bye.
We are going to take a quick break, but stay with us for more independent news. Stay tuned for your weekend weather forecast coming up after the break. You're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
The AMS Speakeasy provides information, peer counseling, and crisis support to the UBC community. Speakeasy volunteers are carefully chosen and trained to assist students in dealing with a wide range of issues, including relationship breakups, substance abuse, sexuality, and exam stress. To access our service for information or counseling, drop in to visit our desk on the north side of the sub-concourse. All drop-ins and call-ins are strictly confidential. We also have an online email referral service. If we can't help you, we can refer you to someone who can.
Radio audience. Side of music.
close to my heart. Try to 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 close to my heart. We're investing industrial noise and goth. Tune into the Vampire's Ball. Midnight, 4 a.m. Friday nights right here at 101.9 CITR FM in Vancouver, www.citr.ca.
I can listen to them and go, this is really cool stuff. And people don't make music like this. They never have, and they never will. I can listen to them and go, this is really cool stuff. And people don't make music like this. They never have, and they never will.
Welcome back to CITR 101.9 FM. It's now 5:31, and it's time for your weekend weather forecast. For that, we turn now to Denise Diatic.
Talk about stormy weather today. Here's your extended forecast for the weekend. Forecast! Ha ha ha, I just cracked myself up. Anyway, a Pacific frontal system that is producing strong southeasterly winds is intensifying over the coast of British Columbia, resulting in wind speeds from 60 to 80 kilometers an hour. The resulting low-pressure system is concentrated over Vancouver Island and is expected to move into the interior by this evening. Therefore, southeast winds will shift to the southwest this evening and become rather gusty. There is a wind warning for Metro Vancouver. And there will be a low of 4 degrees, and on Saturday, April 3rd, we will also have some rain, though the wind should lessen, with a high of 8 degrees and a low of 4. Sunday will be mostly cloudy, with a chance of rain, high of 9 and a low of 4 degrees. And now, for the answer to last week's trivia question. The highest temperature in Antarctica was at the South Pole on December 27, 1978, and was all of a super warm negative 7.5 degrees. Well, maybe the penguins thought that was warm. For next week, I want you to think about the difference between a monsoon and a hurricane. This might be a trick question. That's your forecast for the weekend, brought to you by the Storm Club of UBC. Currently, it's 8 degrees and cloudy at YVR. For News 101, I'm Denise Diatic.
Thanks, Denise, for that weather report. We're going to take a short break for some public service announcements, but stay with us.
Well, the party is off to a good start. Guests are on time. Everyone's out to have fun and to help others fun.
What's the matter? Doesn't that sound exciting to you?
UBC students have an alternative. Looking to unwind? Check out one of the sub's two licensed establishments.
The Pit Pub and Burger Bar is home of the famous Pit Night. Relax with great prices on cold beer and lots of big screen HD TVs, or chow down on charbroiled burgers, beer battered fish and chips, and Belgian fries. The Pit is open 7 days a week, and Wednesday through Saturday is open late until 2 a.m. This business is owned and operated by the AMS, your student society.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, daily grassroots, global, unembedded, international, independent news hour. And this is CITR 101.9 FM.
Welcome back. You're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from the Student Union Building at UBC. We are now going to bring you another interview from early February with Anne Guthrie Warman, president of the Vancouver Secondary Teachers Association.
How did you initially feel after you heard the announcement that possibly 800 teachers could be seeing their jobs, losing their jobs and being laid off?
Well, of course, very concerned as president of the secondary teachers. The 800 letters that went out were qualifications letters. You know, in other words, they're part of if the board is considering laying off, they have to send these letters out early so that we get the qualifications of teachers as jobs come up, and they're placed by seniority and qualifications. But it is, of course, very worrying because we've got a potential budget deficit of between 18 and 36 million. And that means cuts have to be made if the government continues to download costs to us.
What does this mean specifically for schools, and what will secondary, you can speak especially about secondary schools, what will these impacts look like at individual schools and the classrooms at those schools?
Yes. Every school has had, up to 20 to 25 teachers who've received these notices. Currently, we have in place class size, class composition guidelines under Section 76 of the School Act. And even with this year, our schools are in violation of those guidelines. We have a great many classes that are over 30 and have more than 3 special needs. So if these cuts came at the classroom level, we wouldn't be fulfilling our mandate under Section 76 of the School Act. We'd have classes that were, hugely in violation of that. So that's one piece. A lot of these are younger, newer teachers and just starting their career. It would be a shame to lose them, or to lose even a few of them from our system, because we know if we can keep teachers in this profession for 5 years, they tend to stay. So it's very dispiriting for them, and I think for the schools, for all the schools. And we don't know where else cuts will come. They may come in other programs and in the schools, because if there aren't enough teachers to staff the programs.
I spoke with Trustee Jane Bowie just the other day, and she cited the fact that the province is requiring the Vancouver School Board to implement and offer new programs and services, but is not providing providing adequate funding for that. Do you agree with that assessment?
That's correct, yes. And they're downloading costs. That should rightfully, a collective agreement cost in terms of teacher salaries, for example, should not be downloaded to a Board of Education to pay. The government negotiated that, and now they're downloading those costs and other costs, and they took away the annual facilities grant. So, that creates quite a structural deficit, and those costs just simply can't be borne without the Board running a deficit budget or making serious cuts.
What about the Board running a deficit? Is that something that the VSTA would be in favor of?
Well, we would certainly encourage this Board to consider that as an option. It's not specifically allowed,
right.
But we would certainly encourage them to consider that before they make the draconian cuts that may be required if the deficit materializes for what it is, at the amount it is.
Education Minister Margaret McDermott stated that the funding cuts are a result of decreasing enrollment, and that she cited that as the primary reason that the VSB and other school boards across the province are seeing these cuts. Can you respond to that assessment?
Certainly in secondary, we have not seen a decrease in enrollment. There was a small decrease, and then this year there was an increase. So that's actually nonsense. The reason that there's a deficit is costs that should be borne by this provincial government are being downloaded to boards. That's where the problem is, and we spend 2.5 times the amount that we're given on special needs education compared to what we're allocated by this government in order to meet the needs of our most vulnerable students. So it's nonsense to say, particularly in Vancouver Secondary, that it's because of decreasing enrollment. There was a small decrease in enrollment, and then it's gone back up again for us this year. But that does not cover the it's a decrease of 200 or 300 students overall doesn't make that amount of difference. It's downloading costs and taking away facilities grants that we need to keep our schools in up to standard.
Why is the education minister providing these reasons if they are indeed inaccurate?
I don't know. You'd have to ask her. She probably will say they're not inaccurate. But
okay.
With respect to Minister McDermott, she isn't telling the whole story. And there certainly are declining enrollments in some areas. I don't deny that. But in Vancouver, that's not the case at secondary level, and it's the downloading of those costs that's causing our deficit, and the taking away of grants.
We're just about a week away from the opening of the Olympic Games, mm-hmm. and we're seeing an incredible amount of money being spent on these games and costs that were not anticipated, although by some they were. But the government has said a lot of these costs could not be anticipated. And we're at the same time, we're seeing cuts to secondary school sports mm-hmm. programs.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
Well, I feel that it's disgraceful. And I have to tell you that it's interesting that The Guardian in the UK, Sports Illustrated, a number of publications, international publications,
have commented on it already.
I just looked at something online from The Guardian and a Guardian journalist the other day, Sports Illustrated. A number of them have commented on the fact that the optics of that are diabolically bad. The fact that we couldn't even get we had a grant taken away for school sports, and this particular minister said that students could walk and dance in the park. I mean, the naivete and the spin that they're putting on this is extraordinary, in my view. And billions of dollars on this bloated Olympic spectacle. I think the city is rightfully saying enough's enough. I mean, I think people are absolutely disgusted by it. And the fact that billions of dollars are being spent on security while schools have to lose programs, including sports programs, I think points to that grim irony.
Welcome back to News 101. This afternoon, I spoke with the president of the Surrey Teachers Association, Denise Moffitt, about the $12 million deficit the Surrey School District is now facing and the effects the latest announced budget cuts will have on BC's largest school district. You're president of the Surrey Teachers Association. Can you describe your role as president?
My role as president takes on a lot of different activities. So one, we're in charge of the collective agreement for mm-hmm. our members, which is negotiated with our employer, who's the Surrey School District. Mm-hmm. So we take on collective agreement enforcement and protection. We also work on defending public education, mm-hmm. And we do that through politically, yeah. through press releases, through activities that we organize in the community. We also have a professional development wing, and so we promote professional development activities and supports for teachers. Mm-hmm. And we're also involved in social justice initiatives in the community and to improve the quality of living in Surrey.
Oh, okay, great. So around how many teachers does the STA represent?
Well, if you include all of our members, including teachers on call and classroom teachers, mm-hmm. And non-enrolling teachers, we have probably just over 5,000 teachers.
Oh, okay, wow. Mm-hmm. So going with the further cuts that are coming to school districts across BC, how will these cuts specifically affect Surrey schools and all these teachers that are represented?
Mm-hmm. Well, the information that we have currently received from the school district is that there's going to be about $12 million in deficit for the next school year. Okay. So they're going to have to look at trimming that amount of money from the budget because they're not legally allowed to run a deficit. Mm-hmm. And the Surrey School District is a large district, so what they're going to have to do is look at a series of different types of areas to cut. What we've been told so far... Mm-hmm. is that they will be eliminating some administrative positions.
Oh, I see.
We've been told that they'll be cutting back some non-enrolling teachers, and those are teachers who provide special services and supports mm-hmm. for students. So, for example, you might have heard of a learner support mm-hmm. team teacher who would support students who are either learning English or mm-hmm. who have a learning disability.
Oh.
So there's going to be quite a few cuts in that area, as well as other non-enrolling teachers like teacher librarians. Oh. So I know a number of our teacher librarians are very concerned about the cutbacks, and those numbers were just released this week.
Oh, wow, okay.
We may also see changes in the courses that are offered at high schools. So some courses that don't get a high enrollment, the district might not choose to offer those at a particular school. So students may have to look at other options like online courses. And we know that they have given notice of layoff to more than 380 teachers currently in Surrey, although we expect that the majority of those will be returned to work by the fall. It's really dependent on what still happens with the funding over the next few weeks and months. And then you probably also recall this year there were some changes to the school year, and they actually eliminated some days of school and lengthened the rest of the days in the year. And that also is a cost-saving measure, but we haven't heard if the district will do that for next year yet.
You talked a little bit about how some students may have to take online courses. Will that will those kind of things be cut as well? And how about summer school and that sort of extracurricular type thing?
Well, so those are extracurricular, when we talk about it, is usually things that are voluntary activities that teachers are involved in with students. So those things are like sports or clubs that teachers run on their own time. And those activities shouldn't be affected.
Okay.
In terms of online courses, night school courses, and summer school courses, there may be some impact, but we haven't heard yet from the district what that might be. But like I said, there is a chance that sometimes a more specific course, like if at a smaller high school there wasn't enough students to run a block of Lit 12, might offer that instead as an online course. And, you know, that is a different model of learning, and it works for some students, but it doesn't necessarily work for all students. So we think it's important that all students have access to those courses at their community schools if that's the style of learning that works best for them.
So in terms of schools with actually a large number of students, how will class sizes be affected then, and courses and that sort of thing?
So at big schools, what you might see are things like larger class sizes. Already we know that lots of our high school classes are very large. So that means that they're over 30, and in some cases they're over 33, and even we've heard of classes of 36 or 38. We also might see that in those classes there's a larger number of students who have special needs or who have learning disabilities or who are learning English. And so there may be more of those kids in every class, but there may also be fewer supports for those students to help them be successful. So that might be one of the changes that people would see at the big high schools. The other thing that you might see at a big high school is more portables, because, in fact, the Surrey School District is growing despite the amount of money that we're facing in terms of deficit.
So I think the last thing we were talking about was how there will be more portables in bigger schools.
Yes. So one of the things that has happened in Surrey is that we've continued to experience growth. And so this year we had 1,400 new students. And even though we are building schools, the way the funding system works is that you get a projected amount of money to build a capital project a number of years in advance. And right now, we don't have capital projects planned for all of the new students that are coming to Surrey. So that means there isn't classroom space for them in the schools. So we are going to have to purchase, the district will have to purchase portables. And one of the challenges in doing that is that portables come out of our operating budget and therefore contribute to our deficit. So every time we have to buy a portable, it costs between $80,000 and $100,000.
So will that then affect maintenance?
Yeah, so there's costs in terms of maintaining those portables, but also portables are less energy efficient. And our district is also part of a ministry program to reduce carbon emissions. And so if the district has to have a lot of portables and they're less energy efficient, they may also have to pay carbon offsets and pay a penalty for having those inefficient structures. Oh. So there's a number of people who are very concerned about that and who want to really petition the government to invest in building some more schools in Surrey to keep up with the growing population.
So with that then, can you describe the relationship the Teachers Association, well, more specifically the Surrey Teachers Association, has with the Education Minister and with our Liberal government right now?
Well, in terms of the relationship, what we have been doing is we've written letters to the Minister of Education, and we've expressed our concern about the impact, in particular of the lack of capital funding. When the budget was released in early March, we also sent a group of teachers to the legislature in Victoria, and these were classroom teachers who went to that to the release of the budget.
Okay.
And they actually asked for meetings with all of the MLAs from Surrey. Mm-hmm. So that included MLAs who were NDP MLAs and also Liberal MLAs. And we met with the NDP education critic to raise issues around the funding cuts. And we hope to go back and see if we can get another meeting with the Minister of Education, because we have not yet had a chance to meet with her.
In terms of that, was there any good outcome from speaking with the MLAs, or how did that turn out?
Well, I think that the conversations with the MLAs in general, they were sympathetic. Mm-hmm. Some of the MLAs currently in government said that they thought that Surrey had enough money and that they had built schools here and that we had to get more creative in finding solutions. And so that response was disappointing. Mm-hmm. I think the positive thing that's come out of it, though, is the more awareness in the community. And I think if you actually talk to people living in Surrey, mm-hmm. that they are more aware than ever that the funding levels in Surrey are insufficient, and that Surrey as a growing district really needs a change in the way that funding's allocated, mm-hmm. Because we shouldn't be growing and seeing the kind of deficit that we are.
Yeah. In terms of this then, the general reception to the education minister's reasoning is not accepted then within the teachers and the parents?
I think more than ever before, I think that there's public support and teacher support, and people really believe that there's support to fight for more funding, mm-hmm. And that the minister keeps talking about declining enrollment being the major issue and facing education in BC.
Okay.
And I think that it's clear that that can't be true, because you have a district like Surrey, which is the largest in the province, and we're having money troubles. So we're not in the same position as some of the districts that are smaller or have declining enrollment, or who are large geographic regions mm-hmm. with low density. We are like a high density district. It should be, it's run efficiently, so it should be able to sustain itself. And, I think that people finally are starting to realize that, this is just spin coming out from the education ministry.
So in terms of everyone supporting more funding, has there been a plan that's maybe been made up to present a more effective way of managing our large deficit?
So do you mean like a budget plan, or do you mean in a lobbying plan to try and get more money?
A budget plan is more, what I meant to get.
So the school board ultimately are the people who decide, so the Board of Education decides on the budget.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they've been doing is sort of making incremental decisions about the budget. What I know is that they are very concerned about the funding choices that they're having to make.
Mm-hmm.
And I also know that they're finding it very difficult to make these decisions. And I mean difficult because they're unpleasant decisions to have to make, because at the end of the day, the cuts that they are contemplating will affect service to students.
Mm-hmm.
And always the goal of a school board or Board of Education is to keep any cuts as far away from the classroom as possible. But I think when you're faced with a $12 million budget, that's not going to be doable. So I know that they're, I know they're working on a plan. Mm-hmm. I know that they're also working to try and find more money. I know that there's lobbying going on and discussions with government. Mm-hmm. But right now they're rolling out an incremental plan, making decisions sort of as they need to. Mm-hmm. And I know that they're finding that challenging.
Mm-hmm. So going a few questions back, you discussed how there will be a lot more children with learning disability and special needs in these large class sizes and how there will be less teachers to actually help them in that sense. So in terms of that, is there anything being done to tackle that problem specifically?
In terms of looking at strategies, I think they'll probably be different from the union and from the employer. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the union's job is going to be to do a lot of advocacy and awareness. So we're going to be out in the community. We're going to be talking to the media. We're going to be talking to parents in our community and raising awareness about the need for more funding, mm-hmm. because we believe that there needs to be more dollars in the system to make it work. The management, in the meantime, is going to have to try and find some strategies. And so I know that they're looking at restructuring some programs, mm-hmm. potentially looking at changing the way that some of the service is delivered. At this point in time, I can't say that that will solve the problem because mm-hmm. those are new systems. And, it doesn't mean that they will actually work to meet students' needs. So I think that should be a concern for people. But overall, we want to continue to provide high-quality public education, and mm-hmm. we believe that Surrey schools can do that, but we believe we need the money to make that happen.
You mentioned in your 2009 article in the STA Examiner that you felt that the general public seemed to be shifting their attention away from education. Could you expand mm-hmm. on this and discuss, if you still feel this way and how it will affect the future of BC's education?
Well, I wrote that article around the time of the provincial election last year, mm-hmm. and the early to mid stages of the economic downturn.
Yes.
And normally, one of the top election issues, there's always healthcare and education. We're always at the top of the list.
Mm-hmm.
And unusually in 2009, education was sort of number 10 or 11 on a voter's list of issues and concerns. And that was really shocking for us because we believe that especially when you're facing economic turmoil and downturn, that the best place that you can put your money is investing in our youth, which essentially is the future of our economy. And, all of those things that come with education, including retraining workers, post-secondary education, investing in those areas is what develops our economy in the future, especially as we move into such a technology-based economy as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the shift, I've seen more coverage lately about education, and more people are talking to me about education cuts.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope that there's been a shift in public perception, although I haven't seen any surveys or statistics on that recently.
Mm-hmm. It's a little off topic, but I was just wondering, in terms of bus service and that sort of thing, will that be cut as well?
Do you mean the service that's provided by the district?
Yes.
I don't have an answer for that for you today. I haven't heard about what might be happening because those are QP workers, which is another union in in Surrey. And so I haven't yet had a chance to talk to their president to find out what they've been told about which services. But there will definitely be cuts to janitorial, custodial, clerical, and maintenance services. And in general, that's what the QP workers provide, so they will face some cuts as well, and as will teachers.
So do you think that funding levels will ever be restored in upcoming provincial budgets?
Well, we hope so. I think one of the ironic things is that it seems when times are good, mm-hmm. We don't always get a huge influx of money. And when times are tough, we, get cut and, we're told we have to tighten our belts. So I hope that that a system is found to provide education with a sustainable source of funding that allows us to deliver service regardless of some of the bumps in the road that might come economically. So finding a system of funding that's a lot more stable, that allows for long-term planning, and that allows districts to fully fund the kinds of programs that we know kids need.
Mm-hmm.
And all our learners, because you should know, too, that Surrey also has adult students as part of our population, our student population. So it's actually also provides some great retraining opportunities for adults who may not have finished education and are now looking to make changes in their life and improve their education.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that about wraps it up. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you to Denise Moffitt for taking the time out to speak with us. And that's our program for April 2nd, 2010. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. If you'd like to share your comments, give us a hot news tip, or get involved with the show, contact us. Our phone number is 604-822-5334, or you can email news@citr.ca. Be sure to follow us on Twitter with the username CITRNews. You can subscribe to our podcast and listen to past shows at citr.ca. Andrew Longhurst produced this radio program. For more news, join us Monday at 5 p.m. for another edition of News 101, featuring Groundwire, news produced by Canada's campus and community radio sector. I'm Revya Seda. From the entire news team at CITR, thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Hot Mess, right here on 101.9 FM on CITR.
Here you are, take it slow.